out the alarm. A thousand eyes on me constantly, but I just want you, and I just want you. Sleep a single wink and I caught your real eyes. I promised you it's not your fault and I tried. It feels like there's fire on my heels wherever I go. I wake up in the morning laying sleeping next to you. I asked you if I snored you loved and I knew this isn't how I plan to feel when I'm supposed to go.
Beautiful, beautiful disarray. WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth. The cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a once-over.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Welcome, everybody. It is so great to be back here today. We have so much to talk about. First, let me explain what happened last week. Now, understandably, last week I was gone, and understandably, many people assumed, reasonably so, that this was part of my paternity leave, me being gone last week. It was not. I was suddenly, in an emergency fashion, temporarily a single dad last week and ended up having to bail on the entire week. Let me tell you what's going on. So as many of you know, had a baby some weeks ago and took about 10 days off initially and then slowly kind of worked back into doing the show but limiting my other stuff with the idea that once the baby is an age in a couple months where she's no longer sleeping all day, then I would take some other time off and whatever. But in the meantime, wanted to get back to hosting and just kind of a little bit of a sense of normality. And last Sunday night, I was ready to wake up Monday and do the show when at 3 a.m., my girlfriend wakes me up and says, sir, I'm not feeling well. She doesn't really call me sir, but okay. She said, I'm not feeling well. Can we take my blood pressure? With postpartum moms, you monitor for something called postpartum preeclampsia, and one of the signs of that is high blood pressure. And we take her blood pressure. This is 3 a.m. Take her blood pressure. Blood pressure's fine. 3:05, she says, I'm just really, like, my abdomen just hurts. I'm not feeling well. And we're thinking, that's weird. All right, let's call the OB, the obstetrician, their on-call line, and see what they say. By 3:10 in the morning, she's really not feeling well. And by 3:15, she's doubled over on our couch. And at this point, I'm saying, what is this? This doesn't seem good. My girlfriend has a really high pain tolerance normally. Like during the birth, she asked, you know, when would people normally start like getting anesthesia? And the nurses said, oh, 24 hours ago, most people would have had anesthesia. She was like, this really isn't that bad. So when she's doubled over, I know something bad is going on. By 3:20 in the morning, she says, you got to call 911. And at this point, I know it's bad. I call 911 and she is just in such abdominal pain that she's unable to move. 3:30 in the morning, ambulance shows up. And she's rushed to the hospital and says, take care of the baby. So all of a sudden, I am saying, I got to make formula. I need to figure out what's going on. Long story short, by about 11 in the morning, about 8 hours into the ER stay, they figure out that she has a duodenum perforation. The duodenum is sort of like between, it's below the stomach, but above the next thing, I guess it would be like the small intestine, I think, there's a perforation there. And we're thinking, what are the odds? Young woman, healthy, all of a sudden, a perforation, that it's just so unlikely. And what we find out, and of course, with these things, you never know 100%. But what the surgeon and the what everybody agreed upon is this is a rare but known side effect of a significant use of ibuprofen. Ibuprofen. Well, why? After the C-section, she was put on ibuprofen, both in the hospital and then after the fact, every 6 hours. That's a lot of ibuprofen. And this is sometimes you get an ulcer from ibuprofen use. You can have gastritis. And every once in a while, you get a perforation. And this was that rare case. This is, it's a really serious condition. There sometimes postpartum perforations in other countries in different situations lead to death. And so she was rushed into surgery. It's a relatively simple surgery, but with very kind of intense, complicated recovery, including not being able to eat or drink anything for 5 days, which is a form of psychological torture. So that's why I was gone last week. I was going between the hospital and taking care of a baby initially by myself, and eventually we got help from family, and it was crazy. I mean, I don't, you know, there's a million different details I could give you about how difficult situations are in hospitals, even in good hospitals. And, you know, also the realization of like, how do single moms do it? You know, when we just randomly hear, oh, Barack Obama was raised by a single mom. Oh, all right. Like the day to day of that, you know, once you get down to the logistics, once you get down to the specifics of what that is, it's incredible. It really is. And I was always a supporter of all, you know, funding and programs to help parents in general and single parents and all that. I am doubly or triply now a supporter after having experienced it for a week, particularly knowing very little about babies, I have to say. So fortunately now everybody's on the mend. It is like a 4 to 6 week recovery period in total, but things have gotten much, much better. And everybody's reunited. I'm no longer doing the single dad thing. But and by the way, the other thing, single parents who work. I mean, this was a particularly acute situation, right, where my girlfriend's in the hospital and I'm home with a baby and et cetera. But there's no way I could have worked. I mean, it's just impossible. Right. I was doing the pediatrician appointments, managing the feeding, coordinating help with the family that was able to help. But it's literally 24/7. I just don't even know. I don't even know how I could have possibly done any job. And I'm lucky enough to have a job where I'm the boss and I can say, well, I'm off for the week. And of course, we had great fill-ins. We had Luke Beasley and we had Pat and we had Farron and we had the resources to do that. But imagine that, number one, I had an employer saying, you know, we start at 9:15. Where are you? And it's like, oh, I can't make it for a week. I can barely leave the one room in my house where I'm doing things. But imagine also that my income went to zero as a result of that, as many people don't have paid time off or sick time or whatever the case may be. So incredibly eye opening and horrifying. But hopefully now on the up and up. And of course, we've got to monitor for complications. And sometimes after, when you have various tubes inside of you for a week, when they remove the tubes, you've got to watch what happens. And you've got to watch for infection and all of these different things. So we're not completely out of the woods yet. But it's so great to have a little bit of a sense of normality and to be back on the show today. But that was last week. It was not really paternity leave. In a sense, it was, in that it was connected to the birth. And interestingly, that this was the OB team that was part of everything, even though this was not an OB related procedure. The OB team was involved in everything. They said our entire practice is now changing how we do postpartum Advil. We used to do it what's called PRN. The patient just requests it when they feel they need it. And then they often wouldn't. And then they'd wake up and they'd be in pain. So we would just do it every 6 hours, and we're not going to do that anymore. So crazy situation. Good to be back. Let's talk now about the outlook for 2022. One of the conventional wisdoms in terms of Democrats running in midterms and in presidential elections, one of the conventional wisdoms is you run on the economy mostly. Sometimes there are other issues that have a big impact, but you mostly run on the economy. And in general, it's believed, and I believe the polling normally bears this out to be true, running on gun safety isn't good for Democrats in national elections, and running on abortion isn't good for Democrats in national elections. And historically, I believe that that's been true. And we've seen polling to that effect, and we've talked to experts who say these are not when Democrats run on gun safety, it doesn't really motivate other Democrats to get out and vote, and it often will motivate Republicans to come out and vote against those Democrats. The polling this election cycle, now in the aftermath of Roe v. Wade being overturned by the Supreme Court, and in the aftermath of Republicans willing to do very, very little, if anything, when it comes to gun safety. Okay, it looks like there's going to be this kind of very small bill, but it's not really going to deal with the major issues along along gun safety. It actually may be exactly what Democrats should run on for the midterms if the attention span of the electorate is still going to keep those issues in the forefront of voters' minds in November, which is 4.5 months from now. So let's look at the polling first. And we have two sets of polling here. First of all, we have a new CBS News poll. Americans react to the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Most disapprove. Most call it a step backward. And when you look at the data, among all Americans, only 41% approve of the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, and 59% disapprove. And when you look at women specifically, it is even more skewed. Only a third of women approve of the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, and 2/3 of women disapprove. Now, this shouldn't surprise us in the sense that we've been tracking public attitudes towards abortion since Roe v. Wade, and support for abortion being legal in most cases has increased over the last 50 years. Every time the poll is done, support for Roe v. Wade, support for abortion being legal in most cases, has gone up. So that's not a surprise. Also from the poll, 52% of Americans believe that overturning Roe v. Wade is a step backwards, whereas only 31% believe that overturning Roe v. Wade is a step forward. 17% believe that it is neither. Without question, the world looks at the United States overturning Roe v. Wade. What we have seen, I mean, look at my country of Argentina, which was very much behind on abortion rights in the last, I don't remember, it feels like it's been the last 5 years. In the last 5 years, going in the direction of legalizing abortion. Most countries go in the direction of legalizing. The United States now going backwards. And this is what conservatives talk about. When they say conserve, they don't even mean conserve the status quo. They mean go back to the 1950s or even beyond in certain cases. So not a surprise there. And then what will the impact of Roe v. Wade being overturned be on women's lives? 56% of Americans believe that this will make women's lives worse, while only 16% believe that overturning Roe v. Wade will make women's lives better. And then lastly, on the question of will they go further, 57% of Americans believe it is likely that next the Supreme Court will try to limit same-sex marriage. And 55% of Americans believe that the Supreme Court will next or soon try to limit access to birth control, something that I have been talking about extensively with many of you for a long time. So that to me signals this time around running on they're taking our rights. They're taking abortion as a right and they want to come for same-sex marriage. I mean, Clarence Thomas wrote it in his opinion. That may actually be a good idea these midterms. Second issue is gun safety, and we've looked at some of these numbers before. Americans overwhelmingly support the vast majority of gun safety regulations that have been proposed. There's some Pew Research data, which Vox summarized into a very good graphic, which I have on the screen now. And let's see if I can zoom it in a little bit there. When you ask about what about mental health restrictions on firearms, close to 90% of Americans, the black dot here is the overall. Close to 90% of Americans support that. More than 80% of Americans support, 81% support background checks on every purchase, no gun purchases that would be exempt. 79% of Americans support, oppose concealed carry without a permit. There are states where you don't need a permit to concealed carry. You can just do it. Almost 80% of Americans are against that. a 77% support family-initiated red flag laws where a family could say, hey, this person is not stable. They should not be able to have firearms. 70% support police-initiated red flag laws. And even these provisions that have lower support still have nearly two-thirds support. Bans on high-capacity magazines, 64%, and bans on assault-style weapons, 63%. So I believe at this point it is completely clear these are good issues for Democrats to run on this time around. What are the counterpoints? Well, the counterpoints are Democrats haven't been particularly strong on a lot of these issues either in terms of what they've been able to accomplish. Now, you can then say, well, but that's because of Republican obstructionism. Sure, sure. But is there credibility in Democrats saying we're going to take care of these issues? We're going to get back to that issue a little bit later in the show. Another counterpoint, these issues seem very one-sided and important and relevant today to voters. But what about on November 8th? We've got 4.5 months of pumping up on right wing media. Oh, fuel prices and inflation and the border and Ukraine and these issues that are used to attack Joe Biden, even if they have very little to do with Joe Biden. Will guns and abortion still be on the minds of voters come November 8th? How long is the understandable outrage about Roe v. Wade and gun safety going to last? And then lastly, and this is what we'll get back to when we look at some viral a viral interview clip a little bit later. Are there enough voters who see Democrats as credible on these issues to say, OK, I'm outraged about what happened, but do I believe that voting for Democrats is the way that we're going to improve the situation? We'll talk about that a little bit later. But in the immediate, let me know. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. Do you believe that guns and abortion in this particular election cycle are good issues for Democrats to run on? Let me know. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman, and we'll keep talking about it after the break. The primary funding source of the David Pakman Show is your support through our membership program. I invite you to sign up at joinpakman.com. Grab yourselves a membership. We do an extra show every single day for our paid members. It's called The Bonus Show.
Oh, The Bonus Show, where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Well, thank you, Alex. Many people enjoy The Bonus Show daily, and so I would not listen to Alex Jones on that. You can sign up at joinpakman.com and use the coupon code BIGVOTING22, BIGVOTING22, to get yourself a healthy discount off of the cost of a membership. There is a video going viral of pro-choice activists crushing, yes, the Democratic Party over immediate opportunistic fundraising attempts, saying, oh, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Rush us money. Give us money so that we can fix this. And we're going to look at that video. Now, I am thrilled that this is getting attention. In fact, I tweeted about the vile nature of both sides immediately fundraising off of the Supreme Court decision. Last week, I tweeted, quote, is there anyone not raising money off of today's Supreme Court decision? Fundraising emails off the charts. Right wingers saying now is the time to keep going. Give us money. Left wingers saying, give us money to fix this. And I didn't find either of those particularly good faith, rather finding it completely opportunistic. So let's check out this video, which has gone completely viral. This is Zoe Warren and Julianne Diaredida of Rise Up for Abortion. They spoke to MSNBC and they beautifully point out the absurdity now of Democrats, and yes, Republicans as well, don't get me wrong, of Democrats immediately saying, give us cash so that we can fix this, when we know why this happened. And part of it has to do with Democrats. And of course, much of it has to do with the fact that, I mean, you start the sequence of events, it's Donald Trump won in 2016 and then appointed Supreme Court justices. And then it was the exact playbook. Republicans started challenging abortion at the state level with the goal of appealing it to the Supreme Court, with the goal of getting the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. We predicted it in 2016, and that's exactly what happened. Let's check out this video. Absolutely fascinating and well said.
So I received a text message from Joe Biden's campaign yesterday saying that the Supreme Court had overturned Roe versus Wade and that it was my responsibility to then rush $15 to the Democratic National Party. And I thought that was absolutely outrageous because my rights should not be a fundraising point for them or a campaigning point. They have had multiple opportunities to codify Roe into law over the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and they haven't done it. And if they're going to keep campaigning on this point, they should actually do something about it.
Yeah. What are you most worried about, Julia?
I'm most worried about what comes next, because Roe versus Wade was a precedent for Obergefell versus Hodges, Loving versus Virginia, Irving versus Texas, gay marriage, interracial marriage, and privacy in the bedroom.
Correct.
And those, as Clarence Thomas came out yesterday, they're going to be falling like dominoes.
You come from Texas. You're in
yes.
Austin, Texas. There's a trigger law in place in Austin in 30 days.
Yes.
Abortion's going to be banned in your state.
Abortion has been banned at 6 weeks in my state since last September. Which is an essential all-out ban, because most women don't even realize they're pregnant before that point. And there are women in Texas who've already died and have already been arrested for having an abortion or a miscarriage, because we can't really tell that.
It seems like you have obvious anger towards the Democratic Party because you feel as if they've missed chances to codify Roe up until this point, and then here we are. What does that mean for you when it comes to the midterm elections and getting more Democrats elected to move forward with trying to codify Roe?
Well, when it comes down to the primaries, which I think are coming up in the next couple months, it means that we need to get as many people to the polls as possible to vote for more progressive Democrats. We need to get the old white Democrats out of office and put in new, younger people who will actually defend the rights of women and people all over this country. And then when it comes to midterms, we need to make sure that we have those same people who voted for the progressive people in the primaries coming back to the midterms and voting again, and making sure that these more progressive Democrats get into office and can.
So she's absolutely right. I don't tend to do the identity politics stuff in terms of saying we need to get white Democrats out. I want a diversity of representation. That's me. OK, so don't ascribe saying get white people out to me. That's not the way I would use that term. But this is completely spot on in the sense that both parties have used abortion rights as a divisive fundraising issue for decades. I happen to agree with the political position of the Democrats as an individual, because I'm pro-choice. But this has been an issue that's been a fundraising issue on both sides for decades. In some sense, I recognized and I knew that Republicans benefit from Roe v. Wade in the sense that it's something they can keep fundraising on. As long as Roe v. Wade is there, Republicans can say, give us money to oppose Roe v. Wade. Now they've gotten Roe v. Wade overturned. So some have been emailing and saying, well, now how are Republicans going to raise money? Well, they're going to be fine. Now they're going to say, let's push for a federal ban on abortion. That would be the next step. Now, they've eliminated Roe v. Wade, which kind of enshrines abortion as a right. But the next step would be, well, let's get a ban on it. And at the state level, they can work on bans. They can start working on blue states, right? Even if it's unlikely to succeed, they can say, give us money so we can get abortion banned in California and in Connecticut and in New York and Massachusetts and Maryland or whatever, wherever else. So they're still going to have ways to fundraise. And the crazy thing is, the Republican continued fundraising on this issue is going to be more credible feeling in a sense. Because when you look at the Democratic Party, the protesters here are correct. There have been so many missed opportunities to codify Roe v. Wade and abortion rights and to do so many other things. So while you can pick the side that matches your political position and say, well, I'll give them money, the Republicans now have actually accomplished something major. They have gotten Roe v. Wade overturned. And so their fundraising on this issue is almost more credible than that which we're seeing by Democrats. And I got those fundraising emails as well. There was something pathetic about it. There was something disgusting about it, saying they overturned Roe v. Wade. Send us $15 now. $15 to do what exactly? Particularly when we need people in the Democratic Party in elected power who are going to fight much harder for it. So very interesting viral interview there. And we'll continue covering that. There was a completely bizarre dystopian rally over the weekend in Illinois. This was a rally in support, supposedly, of Illinois Republican Mary Miller. Now, Mary Miller once praised Adolf Hitler. We'll get to that. Donald Trump spoke at this rally. Donald Trump was completely incoherent. He looked disoriented. He struggled to speak, even in repeating some of the same lines we've become used to ad nauseum from Trump. He was visibly struggling to deliver them. So first, I'll give you a reminder. Mary Miller, the rally was in support of Mary Miller. Here is older footage of Mary Miller, who said, hey, you know, Hitler was right about one thing.
Each generation has the responsibility to teach the next generation. You know, if we win a few elections, we're still going to be losing unless we win the hearts and minds of our children. This is the battle. Hitler was right on one thing. He said, whoever has the youth has the future. Our children are being propagandized.
Yeah. And, you know, if you want to make the case that the youngest generation is going to decide what the future looks like, you can find people other than Hitler who have made similar points. So choosing to quote Hitler and say that this is Hitler knew this, pretty wacky stuff. So this is who Trump went to Illinois to support. That's who he was there to support. Maybe the most bizarre moment of Trump's speech, Trump mimicking weightlifting during the anti-transgender part of the rally. There's always an anti-trans part of the rally now. There you go. So that's Trump. This is now a regular part of every rally. Trump saying teachers should not be allowed to teach transgender. Very strange grammatical syntax.
No teacher should ever be allowed to teach transgender to our children.
Never, ever teach transgender to our children. I don't know exactly what he means. Teachers shouldn't be allowed to mention that trans people exist. What does that even really mean? But completely mush-mouthed and unable to deliver these diatribes. At a certain point, Trump endorsed, this is so funny, endorsed Mary Miller. I don't know that I've ever heard a less enthusiastic endorsement. He's sort of like, yeah, you know, vote for her. She'll be good.
Go out and vote for Mary. You'll never be disappointed with Mary. She doesn't disappoint people, and she loves you very much.
Yeah, you can really tell Trump is viscerally committed to supporting Mary Miller there. Yeah. Go and vote for her. And then Donald Trump is now claiming that the January 6th Trump riot committee is using doctored video to make their points. Now, I have to tell you, if the argument you're relegated to is the videos were doctored, the testimony was probably pretty damn effective. Take a look at this.
To this day, the leaders of the Democrat Party have failed to forcefully condemn the violence and threats and hold the perpetrators accountable. There could be no greater illustration of the two-tiered system of justice. We've never had anything like what's going on right now that we have in our country. Than the fact that at the very moment the radical Democrats were staging a ridiculous fake trial over January 6th, their party leaders are saying nothing about the violent intimidation of the United States Supreme Court. They refuse to talk about it. They refuse to do anything. As you have seen, the vile group of unhinged partisans and craven lunatics on the Unselect Committee are pushing a fake and fabricated narrative based on doctored video lies and test.
By the way, I hate to interrupt, but just the total. So Trump is lying to the crowd. There are the Blacks for Trump people are up on the stage, strategically placed behind Trump. And the channel broadcasting the speech, Right Side Broadcasting, is offering a free gold coin if you text Trump. It's grift upon lie upon grift upon lie.
Testimony that is totally uncontested by cross-examination. The lies are unbelievable. It's a disgrace to our country. A bunch of rhinos get up. They're going to make their name big for a day. Everything they're showing is ripped utterly out of context, such as when Liz Cheney, a real loser she is, cut out the part of my quote in a speech that I made, a certain speech that said that their voices should be heard peacefully and patriotically. She left those words out. Would you say that's nice? She left them out. It's a sham. Think of that. She left out the words peacefully and patriotically. Why aren't they investigating massive election fraud and irregularities instead of investigating?
Because it doesn't exist.
The people who want to get to the bottom of a rigged and stolen election.
All right. So you get the point there. And there seems to be a growing sensation within Trump land that the hearings were much more effective than they imagined they would be. And this is why they're now relegated to saying the video is doctored. The video is doctored. That's what it is. The news story from Trump, and it's not new, but Trump is now regularly talking about it, is Nancy Pelosi allowed the riots to get out of control. Trump has said this a few times before, but now he's really piling on.
And why didn't Nancy Pelosi and the mayor of Washington, D.C., accept my offer on January 3rd, 3 days before, of 10,000 soldiers or National Guard or more to protect the Capitol? You know, they are in charge of security.
Now, that is untrue. This has been repeated many times. It's not true. First of all, there's no evidence Trump made any request to deploy 10,000 National Guard troops before the rally. Trump, it's been claimed. There's no evidence of that whatsoever, number one. Secondly, Nancy Pelosi is not in charge. The Capitol Police are in charge. The Capitol Police are overseen by the Capitol Police Board and committees from the Senate and from the House. It is not Nancy Pelosi that is in charge. So that's a lie. Trump also taking the opportunity to mention that you should sign up for his platform Truth Social.
Truth Central.
Yeah. And saying there's no free speech anymore. But sign up for Truth.
We don't have free speech in America.
Yeah.
Go out and sign up now for Truth Social. Who's on Truth Social?
Yeah.
Doing good.
Very muted response there. Truth Social will ban you if you post clips from the January 6th committee hearings. So not exactly the unfettered bastion of free speech that Donald Trump claims it to be. And then lastly, not very patriotic, Trump saying America is no longer a great nation.
These Illinois heroes poured are incredible. They just went out and they poured their heart and soul to make America into the greatest nation in the history of the world. They worked to make America the greatest nation in the history of the world. But it is no longer a great nation.
Uh-oh.
It is a nation in decline.
Wow. No longer a great nation. And of course, I thought the patriots always would say America is always great. It's always the best. I guess now maybe an S-hole country might be better, I guess, because Joe Biden is president. So everything going wrong, Trump completely incoherent and supporting someone with no enthusiasm whatsoever, who once explained that Hitler was right about one thing. That is the modern state of Trumpism, and the crowd just eats it all up. He could tell them anything and they would clap and they would cheer. We'll have these clips on our Instagram. You can find them at David Pakman Show. We'll take a break. After the break, we're going to hear from some Trump supporters at the rally. And my recommendation would be get the children out of the room. All right, let's take a little tour through the mind of MAGA. Donald Trump holding this rally for Mary Miller in Mendon, Illinois over the weekend. We looked at some of the things Donald Trump had to say. We talked a little bit about things Mary Miller has said. Let's now look at the attendees. And I continue to think that there's a bit of a split between sort of like your normal Republicans, with whom I still disagree on policy, but they're basically people who, like, on a weekend, they might, you know, go to a tag sale or take their kids to soccer or maybe, you know, even go to a shooting range or whatever. That there's those Republicans. And then there's the Republicans that are willing to travel to a Trump rally. And these are very different people. I'm not saying I love the normal Republicans' political views. That's not what I'm saying. But there is a distinction here. And we're going to start with a guy who, you know what? We're just going to start with a guy. Okay, let's listen to what he had to say.
Fluoride is an old neurotoxin that's used to kill rats. And the Nazis used to put it with Stalin. They'd had a 1936 world court.
Let me stop you right there. Then why hasn't we seen a lot of people drop dead like rats?
That's a great question. Why hasn't we seen? That's exactly the question I would ask.
From brushing their teeth with fluoride using it.
See, if you give a low toxic dose, see, if you had a massive dose of fluoride, you would die. Now, on your tube of toothpaste, it does say contact the emergency room if you swallow a pea drop size. Okay. It actually has that warning on the tube of toothpaste, and there are thousands of visits every year for over fluoridation toothpaste. But that's a minor issue. Putting it in the water, oh, God. Do you know that that extrapolated study for fluoride safety was very simply done with topical fluoride on a tooth in a laboratory? Ingesting fluoride was never studied. Kind of like the SM-102 of the ingredient of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's stop you right there, because I've got a lot of people right now that are going, wait a minute. He just said that if I swallow toothpaste, you're going to go to the emergency room. Okay.
Now, normally it says if more than is used for brushing is swallowed. Like, I know it doesn't even matter. You know, and I know that this is these are completely closed forms of thinking. But what it actually says is if more than is used for brushing, but put that aside.
Tube of toothpaste. It says it on the box.
Okay. Right. So, fluoride aside. Let's push that aside. Tell me how you got, mercury, we'll push that aside too. Let's push all chemicals on the chemical table to the side real quickly.
Expert on chemicals and biological warfare.
Oh, let's not talk about that right now. I want to talk about how you got 15 million Democrats to vote for President Trump.
Oh, on a handshake and my reputation of being the holistic guru of the world.
Did you shake 15 million hands?
So obviously that's very significant mental illness, and it's treated as normal. It's treated as political discourse. It's treated as these are the constituents of a political movement. And we don't want to stigmatize mental illness. It's not about making fun of it. But it is important to point out when you have a political contingent that whose origins are a complete disconnect from the real world. So when we talk about, you know, there's gradations of this. There's gradations. The Comet ping pong stuff, that was heavily influenced by complete paranoid delusions being suffered by many of the people who were promulgating that stuff. And it's all gradations. Thinking taxes should be lower is not this. This is on one end, right? Thinking we should have a lower tax rate is on the other. And in the middle, there's a whole bunch of different stuff. And much of it has just become accepted as valid political discourse. Very, very crazy stuff. Here's one woman who was asked, what are Trump's biggest accomplishments? This is a big Trump fan. It's funny that she even struggles to explain what they are.
On ground here, favorite thing that President Trump did while he was in office was what?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Helping the military.
Military seems to be a very popular subject.
I love how the interviewer is like, there you go. It's almost like dealing with someone who can't think, and then they come up with something, you know, like, can you tell us what year is it? Well, it's 2022. Yeah, 2022. Good. There you go. I mean, he's treating her like she's an invalid. But the point here is they don't even know why they like Trump.
Yeah. And allowing more prayer.
Yeah. Allowing more prayer and helping the military are the big accomplishments of Trump. Here's a gentleman who claims to be former law enforcement, who his big thing is gun rights.
I'm just going to tell you, I'm a retired law enforcement. Hey, I'm a lifetime member of the NRA.
Yep.
I'm all about the Second Amendment.
I feel safe standing right next to you. I'll tell you that.
Hey, I'm all about the Second Amendment.
And what do you think?
Yeah. You know, there's a special snowflake feel to a lot of these Trump supporters. And let me explain what I mean by that. One of the things I've talked about before is that to some degree, this entire narrative that exists, it's caricaturized as being more on the left of everyone is special. And everyone is, whatever, that sometimes taken too far, it can sort of create problems of self-centeredness and et cetera, where like, yes, we're all individuals. We all bring unique perspectives to the table. Everyone deserves to have their ideas heard, and children should be celebrated. That's all true. But at the same time, we're all one of 8 billion people. And everybody has to kind of be part of the collective. And there's millions of people that fall into every category. And we sort of like need some balance. When you go too far, one of the things that I get the feeling of with some of these folks is they believe that they are completely unique and above everything else. The law enforcement guy, listen, I'm retired law enforcement and the Second Amendment, and this makes me unique in my support for Trump and how I should be listened to. It. This is the thing they criticize about the left. They go, oh, all these leftist special snowflake. Well, they kind of do the same thing. As a teacher who supports assault rifles, I am here and I know that it is Trump that we need. Okay, all right, well, it's just another opinion among hundreds of millions. Like, let's apply some healthy skepticism to everyone's perspective here to some degree. Okay, then we go to the next guy. This guy doesn't know what's going on. I won't even introduce this.
When the left media went berserk over President Trump drinking with two hands or walking slow down an icy step. I mean, yep. This guy's fallen up the stairs to airplane one.
Airplane one.
Three times. And where Putin is out ice skating and riding horses and practicing their foreign affairs, which are really poor right now. But with a weak leader, the rest.
All right. So anyway, Putin's strong and Trump is strong, but Biden is weak. That seems to be the most important perspective. And then here's another woman asked about, again, about Trump's biggest accomplishment in office. And she struggles, too. These folks are struggling.
Favorite thing that Trump did during his tenure in the White House was what?
Just one thing?
I'm putting you on the spot for just one. I'm sure there's a dozen.
I mean, I feel like he really brought our country together for once. I mean, I can't think of a president, at least in my lifetime, that's brought us together as a whole like that.
Yeah. Remember how united the country was under Trump? That's pretty interesting. So sometimes I wonder how these folks even manage to feed themselves. And many of them raise kids. I mean, that's the incredible thing. But a very interesting and different political constituency. And the question will be, without Trump on the ballot in November, do they vote? With Trump gone from the White House and not on the ballot, do they vote? And do Trumpian candidates win in November? 4.5 months and we'll have that answer. Last bit of commentary from Trump's rally in Mendon, Illinois. A Mike Pillow, the CEO of MyPillow, Mike Lindell, known to us as Pillow, of course.
We're doing a class action lawsuit against all machines.
He spoke and the crowd essentially slept through him saying CNN is no longer calling it the big lie because it's all true that the election was stolen from Trump in 2020. The crowd's totally bored by it.
CNN getting out in front of it, and they said we were no longer call it the big lie because they know it was the big truth, and the big lie was the big lie.
Right.
Donald Trump won that election 81 or 82 million to Biden's 66 million. Those are the real totals, everybody.
Yeah, Trump really won by, what is that, 16 million votes? This is a lie that they're repeating, that CNN no longer calls it the big lie because it's true that the election was stolen from Trump. All that happened is that there's been a shakeup in CNN management. And they've decided they want to get away from the term, the big lie, that nothing is changing about the truth or in this case, the falsity of the claim that Joe Biden stole the election from Trump. They've made an editorial decision not to call it the big lie. Nothing else has changed. And also a major, major, major announcement from Mike Pillow. He is now launching My Coffee. But there's something funny about it, which doesn't sound very patriotic to me. Take a listen to this.
But I'm actually going to Miami in three days or 4 days for filming.
Filming.
We have My Coffee. This is a family-owned coffee. It's the best coffee you're ever going to have in your life. There's nothing like it. Believe me. Everything that I put out there, I do my due diligence.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, this has been 6 months in the works. These guys have their own fields in Colombia.
Whoa, wait a second. They're in Colombia. Now, I know many of you will say, but hold on a second, David, sir. Most coffee beans are grown outside of the United States for climate reasons. The United States is just not suited climactically to growing coffee beans. Well, OK, but Hawaii is. Why isn't Pillow doing the patriotic thing and saying we will get U.S. raised coffee beans from Hawaii? No, He's offshoring it to Colombia.
Family-owned, they've been doing it for years.
Colombian coffee.
Imagine a micro, remember, like a micropia. You know, you can grind your own, or you can have, you know.
A micron field, what the hell?
It's already ground. But having that where you can get it for prices, because that's what I do. Yeah. Bring the best to you.
Right. Well, it sounds like the best isn't American, Mike. What a situation. And this guy will not go away. It's actually interesting that he's not fading at all. And I don't know what to make of it, but the crowd increasingly bored by Mike Pillow. We'll take a quick break. Back after this, we are going to hear some reactions, including from Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota, to a great question. Okay, so you ban abortion. Who funds all these children that women are forced to carry to term? She did not have a good answer. We'll look at it after the break. One of the big questions, of course, in the aftermath of the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade is, great, you'll force all these women to have children that they don't want or don't feel equipped or don't have the money to have. Who is going to help the women? Who's going to pay for the kids? Because it's not very pro-life to force a birth and then do nothing for the mother or the child in that situation. And in fact, I tweeted about this sort of tongue in cheek. By saying now that Roe v. Wade, and I know that I've misspelled Roe, the voice to text misspelled it. I throw myself at your mercy. Now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, the right wing will show their devotion to children by expanding the child tax credit, funding child care and pre-K, paid maternity and paternity leave, etc. I can't wait for them to do it. And of course, it's tongue in cheek because they don't plan to do that. Well, Trump suck up. Republican governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem, was interviewed over the weekend by Martha Raddatz, and she was asked, what are you going to do for these women? You said they will never be alone. What exactly does that mean? Her answer leaves a little bit to be desired.
But we want to help support these mothers. I think we can do better in this country, making sure that we're walking alongside them in these situations and making sure that they do have the type of health care and the support financially that they need.
Well, let's look at that support. The Nonpartisan Commonwealth Fund, a social policy think tank, says the 14 states that have the most restrictive abortion laws, including South Dakota, invest the least in policies and programs for women and children. So
right.
What do you mean when you say these mothers will never be alone?
Yes.
Well, I would say that the facts on the ground are that South Dakota is doing a lot to coordinate with nonprofits, with churches, and then also the state in a new way by launching this website and committing to in legislative session to support these mothers is incredibly powerful. You know, this is a conversation that.
Okay. So far she said, we are going to help support women. We're going to walk alongside women. We are doing a lot with churches. And we are going to, and nonprofits as well. And they're going to really talk about this in legislative session. Wow. Well, it sounds like it's going to be fine, doesn't it?
We have a change now at the federal level. The states will be each evaluating how they approach this situation.
Right.
Getting health care to mothers, helping them during a time of crisis is incredibly important. And these states, remember, Martha, are overwhelmed right now with other situations that are going on, with what Joe Biden is doing to the energy prices in this.
Guys, how can you expect South Dakota to help the women forced to birth a child when there's an energy crisis created by Joe Biden? Yeah, I mean, they South Dakota has to deal with that. They can't help the women. And then here's another. And this is also interesting. Even though Kristi Noem says a bunch of times that women shouldn't be prosecuted for getting an abortion, she leaves open the door to prosecuting women who leave the state to get an abortion and then come back. Listen to this.
And just one more question. What if your constituents travel to another state to get an abortion?
Right.
You know, that certainly isn't addressed in our statute today. And so
it's not addressed in our statute today. OK, that's not a statement of opinion, though. That's just what it is right now.
I think that's things that there'll be debate about.
There will be debate about what to do about that. Wow.
But also, we're having lots of debates in South Dakota, how fundamentally our life has changed the last couple of years, just with increased costs and inflation and what this administration is doing to every single family's budget.
So understand, she is not saying, oh, Martha, no. If someone goes to another state where abortion is legal and then comes back, obviously, we're not going to do anything about that. That's not the way the law works. That's not the way states work. No, No, she actually deflects and then talks about Joe Biden and energy prices. She's leaving the door open to saying we will actually try to prosecute women who leave, go to a state where abortion is legal, have an abortion, and then come back. They're going to try. I'm not saying they will succeed, but they're going to try. Hey, this is very, very strange. There is a new report that radical Trumpist Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, under investigation for a number of different potential crimes, including trafficking of a minor across state lines for sexual purposes. We have a report now that Matt Gaetz sought a Trump pardon before the Trump riots. This is strange because it raises the question of why did he want that pardon? Newsweek report says Florida Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz had been personally pushing for a broad presidential pardon from Donald Trump before and after the January 6th attack, the House committee investigating the riot revealed. One of the biggest revelations from Thursday's hearing was the testimony naming six Republicans, including Gaetz and others, who wanted clemency from Trump before he left office. By the way, that includes Louie Gohmert and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Additionally, Alabama Representative Mo Brooks allegedly sent an email on January 11th seeking, quote, all-purpose pardons for every lawmaker who objected to electoral votes from Arizona and Pennsylvania. Gaetz has been contacted for comment. The other Gaetz part. In her recorded testimony, it was described how Gaetz had been asking for a presidential pardon before the other Republican lawmakers accused of being involved in attempts to overturn the 2020 election. Quote, Gaetz was personally pushing for a pardon, and he was doing so since early December. I'm not sure why, said Hutchinson. He reached out to me to ask if he could have a meeting with Meadows about receiving a presidential pardon. Eric Hirschman, a Trump White House lawyer, also said in testimony played on Thursday, Gaetz wanted a wide-reaching pardon from Trump. Quote, the general tone was we may get prosecuted because we were defensive of the president's position on these things. The pardon he was discussing, requesting, was as broad as you could describe from the beginning of time up until today for any and all things. He mentioned Nixon, and I said Nixon's pardon was never nearly that broad. This is very strange. So the natural question is, why did Matt Gaetz so early and so broadly want a preemptive blanket pardon? The natural speculation is, was Gaetz trying to crowbar in a preemptive pardon for the things he's being investigated for personally? Well, it's merely speculation, but it's a reasonable question to ask. The issue is most of the stuff, I'll put it a different way. Many of the things Gaetz is being investigated for are state crimes and not federal crimes. And a presidential pardon wouldn't help you with state crimes. That being said, the interstate trafficking of minors, that's a federal crime and that's a really big deal. So one speculation is Gaetz figured, you know, everybody's going to try to get pardons and we're going to say it's for supporting Trump's view about the election and trying to fix it and all these different things. But maybe I can sneak in some help with what I may be up against criminally for my personal activities. That's one possibility. It is amazing that we regularly are charging all sorts of different people, poor people, non-white people, people not in positions of power, for insignificant, oftentimes kind of contrived charges. The war on drugs, you could argue, is contrived at the big picture, as we know the origins of it, to be a sort of racist reaction to the Civil Rights Act of the 1960s. And then meanwhile, Gaetz and his fellow whatever can be suspected of having committed pretty serious crimes. And they just walk around. They often never even get charged. And when they do, it's all done very respectfully to their image and to their PR. Even when there is, in the case of Gaetz, corroborating witnesses who are cooperating, as we know, Jared Greenberg, I think, is the guy's name and the example of Gaetz. So, you know, Trump likes to talk about two justice systems, the one for right wingers and the one for everybody else. It's a completely bogus framing of the entire issue. We do have two justice systems in the United States. I've talked about it for a long time. It's people in positions of power and who have money and who have influence, and then everybody else. And we are definitely seeing that with Trump and his cronies and the people around him, and maybe also with Matt Gaetz. The reason for Gaetz wanting this preemptive blanket pardon, We can speculate. Maybe at some point we will know, but it's a real question mark. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 219-2-DAVID-P. This is a new favorite caller of mine. This is one of the most confident callers I've ever had. This caller says he is the authority on UFOs and aliens, and he is going to now, beyond any doubt, tell us the truth about UFOs. Listen to this.
Yeah, David, great show. I don't watch too often. I'm too busy, but I have another follow-up comment about UFOs.
Loves the show, never watches it. That's okay. I'll take the praise.
You could bank on this. And I am good when I do my research. Mm. I consider myself the best. I already have a proven track record. The evolution of our solar system before the Earth was formed and all the planets has never been visited by probes or observations from any extraterrestrial society in the entire universe, or from these baloney theories about multi-universes or fourth dimensional beings. Never. There had never been a UFO that landed on this planet. No probes, no passbys, nothing. There's no aliens living on this planet.
Okay, never. All right. I think you get it. I really appreciate the caller confidently putting that to rest. And I know there are people in our audience with different perspectives on this issue, but this call, if you go by his confidence, he must be completely correct. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. Sarah Huckabee Sanders says that if she is governor, kids in the womb will be as safe as kids in classrooms. Wait a second. That something about that is not making sense. We will discuss it. We have a study that finds that when a state passes a concealed carry law, gun crime goes up by 33%. And we will also talk about the belief among more than half of Americans that the Supreme Court is coming for gay marriage sooner or later after the Roe v. Wade decision, that the Supreme Court is coming for gay marriage. I happen to agree. And we will talk about that on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com. You will get instant access to the bonus show.
That is a frickin' predator right there.
Not predatory at all. If you like it, then you keep it. That's how it is. Use the coupon code BIGVOTING22 to sign up at joinpacman.com, get instant access to the bonus show, and then, if all goes well, I will be back here with you tomorrow.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
So the plight of migrants seeking refuge is always a humanitarian crisis, but tonight we are dealing with a horrific human tragedy.
At least 46 people have been found dead inside a sweltering tractor trailer abandoned in San Antonio, Texas. 16 survivors, including 4 children, have been hospitalized. We'll speak to Fernando Garcia, founder of the Texas-based Border Network for Human Rights. We'll also look at the ongoing fallout from the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe. Then, is raising money to send pregnant people to another state to get an abortion considered aiding and abetting? We'll speak to the head of an abortion fund in Texas, then look at the fight over privacy rights online in a post-Roe America.
In our joint investigation with The Markup, we found that Facebook is collecting highly sensitive data about the visitors of hundreds of crisis pregnancy center websites across the country, enabling anti-abortion organizations to target and influence people online.
And we look at conservative justice Clarence Thomas's call for the court to overturn key rulings establishing the right to contraception and taking down same-sex marriage. We'll speak to Jim Obergefell, the lead plaintiff in the Supreme Court case that legalized same-sex marriage throughout the United States. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Texas, at least 46 migrants were found dead inside a sweltering tractor trailer that was left abandoned on a remote road in San Antonio, Texas, Monday. 16 survivors were hospitalized, including 4 children, to be treated for heat stroke and exhaustion as the region faces a scorching heat wave. Local authorities said a city worker heard a cry for help from inside the truck Monday afternoon and found a body on the ground outside the trailer's partially open gate. This is San Antonio's fire chief, Charles Hood.
The patients that we saw were hot to the touch. They were suffering from heat stroke, heat exhaustion, No signs of water in the vehicle. It was a refrigerated tractor trailer, but there was no visible working AC unit on that rig.
This is among the deadliest tragedies in recent decades of people attempting to cross into the United States and comes as the Biden administration continues to enforce harsh border policies blocking most people from safely entering through ports of entry at the U.S.-Mexico border. Thousands are forced to take on extremely dangerous routes and rely on smugglers. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. Judges in Louisiana and Utah have temporarily blocked statewide abortion bans from taking effect following